there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on Vermont Edition. And I wanted to let you know that what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Short and sweet, right to the good stuff. Thank you.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. The total solar eclipse is on Monday, and the reality of what's going to hit in the state is setting in. Lots of visitors, for one, and no school or half days for many, many kids. Today on the show, we're going to hear about how children across the region are learning about the eclipse. We'll also share tips for watching it safely with young kids. And at the end of the hour, you're going to hear from a woman who bought a mobile planetarium dome. She now runs a small business teaching kids and adults about space. But first, let's head to Addison County. Late last week, Vermont Edition producer Andrea Lorien visited Salisbury Community School. When she got there, third and fourth graders were leading the first graders through a variety of eclipse activities. Here's fourth grade student Harper explaining the experiment that she's showing to a first grader named Olivia.
We are going to so I'm going to hold the sun, and then Olivia's going to close one eye, not yet, and then she's going to put it in front of the sun, and it's going to be eclipsed.
Another fourth grade student, Rowan, showed his first grade buddy the states that will experience a total solar eclipse.
We're learning where the solar eclipse is going to be other than Vermont. We have a map that shows the line of totality, and all the states that are in totality will be the states that will have a full solar eclipse. So there's Texas, there's Pennsylvania, there's Ohio, there's New York, and that's most of the station. That's most of them.
Third and fourth graders were also very excited to share some facts that they learned.
The next solar eclipse is in 2079.
How old are you all going to be in 2079?
I'm going to be 63.
I'm probably going to be 64.
I'll be 65.
You're going to be 65.
I'm going to be 64.
I'm going to be 64.
Wow, so you're going to be grandmas and grandpas by then.
And the last eclipse was 1932.
I learned this, that actually, if like we had like a solar eclipse every month, it wouldn't be special because it would be like, oh, another solar eclipse.
That was third and fourth grade students at Salisbury Community School in Addison County. Adorable. Well, our guest today is very well versed in talking to children like the ones you just heard about science. Elizabeth Knuckles is the senior education manager for the Echo Leahy Center for Lake Champlain. It's a science and nature museum in Burlington geared towards kids. And it's a Vermont Public underwriter. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Michaela. Great to be here.
We're so glad to have you. I saw you. You brought some props today as we were just listening to the kids.
I did.
You were holding up a sun for me.
My sun puppet and my moon puppet.
Great. All right. We're going to have some good learning. We might have to make a video afterwards, too. So first, Elizabeth, before we get into the eclipse, let's talk a bit about Echo. It's a pretty magical place. Can you describe it for someone who's never been?
It is a pretty magical place. I think mainly one of the big reasons is because where it's located, right on the shores of Lake Champlain. So we're sitting in Vermont, but we can see the beautiful Adirondacks and the lake and New York straight across the way there. So it's a beautiful location. And then inside, there's amazing science learning happening all the time. One of our favorite things to do is to do engineering design challenges with kids and with families, where they're building tools to solve problems and seeing themselves as problem solvers, engineers, collaborators, critical thinkers. So building all of that kind of science identity, all while having fun and enjoying time with family.
And it's not one of those don't touch this kind of museums.
Touch everything museum, yes. We don't touch the animals, though. We do have over 70 different live animals, kinds of live animals that live at Echo. So you're also visiting their homes. There are Echo animal ambassadors. But it's fun to get an up-close look at all of those neighbors, animal neighbors that we have living right in Lake Champlain and the surrounding area around the lake as well.
And how long have you worked at Echo?
I have worked at Echo for almost 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, you are the expert we're looking for today. So when did Echo first get the eclipse on its calendar? Realize this was something you were going to need to do some programming around.
Probably in 2017, when we had a partial eclipse, is when we started thinking about the next eclipse. Because it was such a popular, it was a popular event. Everybody was excited to learn more about the partial eclipse, and we knew that this 2024 total eclipse would be coming up for us here in Vermont, and that it was going to be a big deal. And we started thinking about putting timelines on the calendar about when we would need to order glasses, and thinking about the kind of event we'd like to have when this happens. And here we are.
And I hear you have many, many glasses now.
We have plenty of glasses this time. We've been giving them out to schools across Vermont. We've been giving them out to libraries across Vermont. Anyone who comes to Echo can purchase Eclipse glasses, as many as they need. So yes, we are well stocked this time.
So the Echo Center, as you were saying, is usually pretty lake focused. You're right on the lake there. You have all of these amazing animals and fish that live in the lake and in this region. But these days, when you walk in to Echo, you'll see these huge planets hanging from the ceiling. What are some of the ways in which the eclipse has transformed the museum itself?
Yeah. Well, just as we're preparing, and everybody is so excited and curious, and everybody wants to come in and learn and tell stories about their experiences of watching other celestial events that have happened in their lifetime. And so we just like to be a gathering place for that to happen and to inspire those conversations. So the planets are exciting and they inspire the conversations, as well as we have a pop-up eclipse exhibit that helps to inspire questions too. So there's just been a lot of excitement and a lot of learning that's been happening at Echo around our planets and what's about to happen in the sky.
Let's start with Marcia in Barrie. Marcia, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My question is, if we're using the eclipse glasses as we should be doing, And it reaches totality. How do we know when it reaches totality? What does it look like through the glasses so we'll know when it's safe to take the glasses off and when it's the time to put them back on?
Mm, great question, Marcia. Thank you for asking. Elizabeth, any safety tips for Marcia here?
Yeah, absolutely. So you should practice using those eclipse glasses. Go out on our next sunny day before the 8th, and just put them on and locate the sun. I tell folks to make sure that wherever you're planning on watching the eclipse, that it's a clear view of the sun, that there aren't buildings or trees in the way. So find your clear view. And you'll notice that you see the full disc. Other than that, the glasses are dark. You're not going to be able to see the trees in your yard or other objects. So you're just going to see that big round disc. So while you're watching the eclipse on Monday, you'll see the big round disc of the sun, because fingers crossed, it's going to be a clear sky and it will be a clear view.
We can will this into happening. It is going to be clear.
Absolutely. So you'll see that clear round disc of the sun, and then you'll notice the moon starting to move in front of the sun, and a crescent will be cut out that grows larger and larger and larger as the eclipse evolves. Then there'll be a part where it's a total blackout in the middle, and all you will see is that shine around the edges of the moon that we call the corona. That shine that you see will not be as bright as the disk that you observed before the total eclipse. So as soon as you notice that the moon is blocking the sun completely, that's totality, and all you're seeing is the shine from the sun around the moon, you can take your glasses off. It'll be minutes, 3 glorious minutes, and then the moon will slowly move off, and you'll start to see the crescent appear as soon as you notice the crescent of the sun appear again. Put those glasses right back on, and then you can finish watching the remainder of the eclipse.
There you go. Well, thank you, Marcia, so much for asking. That was such a clear example. We're glad you're here, Elizabeth. Now, when our producer, Andrea, visited Salisbury Community School last week, she spoke with a science teacher named Amy Clapp about how she approaches creating curriculum, for students across different age groups. First, let's hear a clip from that conversation.
I think the most important thing for me is to give each kid an entryway to understand the eclipse at their level. So from as simple as just one thing eclipsing something else and what that means, to for some of the students, they're ready to think about the size and distance relationship between the Earth and the Moon and the Earth and the Sun. And others can start to understand just how vast space is and how these are lining up and the tilt of the orbit of the moon, how all of those things affect this. But probably the most important thing for me is that kids walk away from this realizing they've experienced something incredible. And they get that sense of wonder and awe that makes learning probably the most exciting thing you can do.
Well, Elizabeth, I'm wondering how you instill that sense of wonder and awe that the teacher Amy Clapp was just talking about.
Yes, I can't agree with Ms. Clapp more about a couple of points that she made. One is the most important thing is inspiring that awe and interest and excitement about the event. That is just going to lead to questions and learning, and the kids are going to direct that learning, and that's how they learn the most, when they're inspired and excited about something like the solar eclipse. And then the other thing she said was that it's important to give kids many entry points so that they can sort of engage in the information that you're putting out there at the level where they are. And so I like to, when I'm talking especially to very young children, is first of all to show my own excitement and enthusiasm, because that is catching. And so I'll tell them that something really special is going to happen in our sky on Monday. Do they know what that is? And so just start the conversation there, because some of them, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, can tell you exactly what's going to be happening in the sky on Monday. And actually, they have a really good idea about the science behind it already. It's very impressive and amazing. And then some might not be so sure. And so asking that question as a jumping off point, and then going from there and sort of approaching it as a learning opportunity for you all together. So my next question would be, yes, it's going to be a solar eclipse. I wonder, what is a solar eclipse? And then here are their ideas about that. Their ideas might be right on the nose, or there might be misconceptions, or
I got to hear some of the ideas.
Yeah, that misunderstanding. You've heard. Well, I've heard that the moon is going to be eating cheese, and growing bigger and blocking out the sun.
Okay.
And that's exactly what I say. Okay, that's an interesting idea, and just keep going. And then once I gather all the ideas of the kids in the room, I just say, let's do some research together. I want to learn more, and then use something for that research part. So it might be a story or a short video, one of those that you could use as the research portion of your conversation together. So you're not correcting, you're not telling them what it is, you're wondering together and then learning together, doing some research together. I've read a couple of great books. A Few Beautiful Minutes by Kate Allen Fox is a great one. Someone is Eating the Sun by Ruth Sunbarn is another great one. I've used both of those books to do some research with kids. And then after the story, just hear, what did they learn? What did they think was interesting? What are they curious about? What other questions do they have? And go from there.
And we'll be sure to include this list of resources that you just shared on the show page for Vermont Edition. And you mentioned videos, how they can be helpful sometimes. I do want to call out a brand new video that our podcast for Curious Kids, But Why, recently made. It's available on YouTube. And this podcast, which is hosted by Jane Lindholm, has a new episode out that's all about the eclipse, as well as a longer video and a short one, just 2 minutes long. It's called What is a Solar Eclipse? And let's listen now to an excerpt.
As the moon moves in its orbit, it will partially cover the sun for over an hour until the sun is totally blocked. That's called totality. The sky will be dark and the sun's corona, the gassy atmosphere, will be visible.
That's from But Why. And again, we'll link to all of that on vermontpublic.org. Now, Elizabeth, let's talk about viewing the eclipse safely if you are a little kid. Now, I know you have some great ideas for ways in which kids can use eclipse glasses, even if they're a little too young, to keep the regular ones on by themselves.
Yeah, I think it's important to have that conversation that the sun can damage your eyes. And it's very important to be wearing the glasses if you're going to be looking at the sun. I like to give the kids, especially very young kids, the choice. You do not need to look at the sun, but if you're going to look at the sun, you need to have this protection on your eyes. Most people have tried on these eclipse glasses before, and honestly, they don't fit my ears that well. They definitely do not fit little ears that well. And so I have found a good way to create something that kids are more likely to keep over their eyes is to cut off the little arms of the eclipse glasses and make a mask out of the glasses part, the eye part itself. So you can do that, again, by cutting off the arms. Put the middle part of the eclipse glasses, the eye frames, into the middle of a paper plate. Draw around the frame of the glass with a pencil, and then cut that space out of the middle of a paper plate. You can then tape the glasses to the back of the plate and let the kids decorate the plate. They'll be more likely to wear it, I think, if it turns into a very fun mask. I've put a craft stick onto my paper plate mask, and then they can have fun putting that in front of their face. You cut out a little notch for the nose and a V shape down to the edge of the plate. And I think the kids are more likely to keep this over their eyes and have fun wearing their mask while they're viewing safely. One thing that I found that kids often do when they're using the regular glasses is they tend to peek over the top of the glasses to sort of orient themselves to where the sun is in the sky. And the paper plate adds a mask to the top of the glasses, so that is less likely to happen. So kids are less likely to peek over the paper plate to try and find the sun with just their eyes. So that's a fun activity to do with kids as you're preparing for the big moment.
That's great. I love yours. It's very well decorated, much better than my initial idea of just getting a big roll of duct tape and wrapping it around their heads.
That could work.
Maybe not the most humane. Well, we've got a couple emails from listeners about eclipse-related events, including one from John with the Vermont Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired. John writes that their organization is going to have light sound devices at 4 locations along the path of totality. Waterfront Park in Burlington, right next to Echo. The VABVI parking lot in South Burlington, the State House steps in Montpelier, and the Fairbanks Museum in St. Johnsbury. And these devices convert light energy into sound, and the sound changes as light changes. So they'll make the eclipse event audibly accessible to someone with impaired vision. Pretty remarkable.
Very remarkable. Yeah, I am excited to see that in action.
Yeah. And we also got an email from Miriam with the Winooski School District, who writes that JFK Elementary School is throwing a huge solar eclipse learning event this Friday from 9 to 12:30. A second grade teacher is going to lead students in hands-on activities exploring the science behind eclipses. There will be a NASA partner eclipse ambassador there to help craft pinhole viewers, conduct experiments, and enjoy a puppet show to learn about this celestial phenomenon. pinhole viewers. Have you been teaching kids how to use those?
Elizabeth? I have. I did it with a group of Brookside first graders this morning. So we're making our pinhole viewers out of a paper towel roll with tinfoil on one side and the index card white sort of stage on the other end. And so you can find that craft online on the our page at echovermont.org. That's a way to view the eclipse as well. You've also probably seen those made out of chew boxes or cereal boxes as well.
I remember making a chew box one when I was a kid.
The larger versions. Yeah.
Right. Well, we have a call coming in from Dell. Dell, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple questions. One is that I heard that the speed, that the shadow of the eclipse travels is 1,800 miles per hour. Is that accurate?
Oh, Elizabeth, do you know?
Well, that is a really great question, and I don't know the answer.
I read it in an Annie Dillard piece that's in a remarkable piece about her experiencing of a total eclipse. And she said that the difference between a partial and a total eclipse is like the difference between riding in an airplane and falling out of the airplane. It just sounds like
sounds very exciting. Difference. Yeah, I know that it's going to be a quick event for us. You're going to want to be in place because the totality is going to start and finish within 3 minutes. So it's I know that our moon is moving quickly, and I don't know the numbers. Can we get Mark Breen on the phone?
Yeah, I should have him on speed dial at this point. We'll try to find out that answer for you, Dell. Thank you so much for calling in and for referencing that great Annie Dillard piece, which I believe is from the Atlantic magazine, and it's kind of making the rounds ahead of the eclipse. All right. So we've seen the pinholes, we've seen the mask. Any other great crafts the folks could be doing with their kids ahead of the eclipse?
Yeah. We are drawing coronas at Echo as a craft that's kind of fun to do with chalk, where you just make a circle on a black piece of paper with chalk and then sort of spread out the edges of the chalk so that it looks like a fully eclipsed sun with the corona in view. So that's an activity we're doing at Echo with kids. But also, I would say another thing that I love to do with children after we've learned together a little bit about the science of an eclipse is to act it out. So get bodies moving and act out what it might look like in the sky with our own bodies as the Earth, Sun, and Moon. So you can assign somebody as each one of those players and have the Moon move around the Earth and the Earth move around the Sun and try to locate that moment where everybody's in alignment and think about that happening up in the sky with our celestial bodies that are moving around in space. Kids love to act things out either as a puppet show or with their bodies, or you can use balls. So a basketball is the sun and a baseball as the earth and maybe a marble as the moon could be another way that you could do it and let the kids act out that particular event.
Getting kids up and moving. Well, our own intrepid Jane Lindholm just provided us an answer to our last caller's question. She writes that eclipse shadows travel at 1,100 miles per hour at the equator and up to 5,000 miles per hour near the poles.
Interesting.
There you go.
That's a lot to wrap your head around.
Your eyes just got very wide. Well, we received a question from Instagram that many kids and adults might be wondering right now. Do dogs like the eclipse?
I had a child ask me that question, if they needed to put eclipse glasses on their pet. So my thought is, if you think about this, how often does your pet look up and stare at the sun? And if they don't do that on a regular basis, they probably aren't going to be keyed into it on the day of the eclipse. Now, having said that, even though they might not be staring up at the sky to try and notice the eclipse, they are going to notice something different. It's going to feel different. It's going to look different, and it's going to sound different. during the total eclipse. And that's something great to talk to kids about as well. What do you think it's going to look like? And then imagine that. What do you think it's going to feel like? And what do you think it's going to sound like? Because those things are going to be different. And in the middle of the day, it's going to be strange. And the animals are going to notice that. So you might notice birds going to roost. You might notice, if we had crickets on April 8th, which I don't think here in Vermont we will, but crickets in places would start cricketing like they do in the evening. And other things that you notice animals doing at night, animals going to sleep or animals waking up, like the owls. So going out in the evening at dusk before the 8th might be a nice thing to do with your children. And think about, just as the sun is setting, what does it feel like outside? And this is what we're going to experience right smack in the middle of the day on Monday. And then they'll be prepared for what that might feel like.
Well, I should also note here that our Morning Edition host, Jen Jarecki, recently spoke with the state veterinarian about what to do with pets during the eclipse. You can find that interview at vermontpublic.org. And that's where you can also find more information about But Why, our podcast for curious kids that has a great episode out right now about the solar eclipse that answer many of these questions. All right. So animals, they're going to be okay. Maybe keep your pets inside for now.
Yeah, I think they're smarter than we are, and they'll know.
Now, some kids really love routine and rely on routine to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking a lot about how Monday and the eclipse day is going to be a really special day and very exciting. But for some kids, that might feel scary. Do you have any tips for talking to a child about the eclipse who might feel some fear or worry or concern about having a day that's very different than their normal Monday?
Yeah, I think that I would approach that in the same way, where letting them know that this is special, asking them what their questions are, and then trying to prepare them as best as possible by reading some stories, learning together, maybe sitting outside right as it gets dusk, so you know how that feels and remind them how that feels, and that's how they'll be, what they'll experience in the middle of the day. So I just think open conversation about it as much as possible so that you can better understand what are their concerns and then talk through those concerns with them. You know, they can always have the choice. If you do not want to be outside, if you'd rather be inside with your stuffed animals and talk to them about the eclipse and read a story instead of being outside, maybe that's a choice for kids who are particularly anxious about the event. But I think for most, that once they understand that it's safe to be outside, it's safe to have your fun mask on during the event, and it's ultimately your choice if you want to look at it or not look at it, or be outside or be inside.
Well, let's discuss some of the events going on day of at Echo and nearby. What are some of the things that you're most excited to participate in?
Well, I am excited about the day on the waterfront. I have definitely been down on the waterfront for July 3rd, and I know what that feels like in the waterfront park. Supposedly, this is going to be an even bigger, busier day than July 3rd on the waterfront at Echo. So we've, at Echo, we've been selling our tickets for the day in advance online, and they are sold out. So our event is sold out, our coming into Echo is sold out. But of course, the waterfront park is open, Battery Park is open, and many of the other places around Burlington are going to be hosting events as well. You can find out about all of those events on the Burlington website. They have a special website for Eclipse Day. So if you want to come down to the waterfront and be part of this big event, just understand that a lot of other people are going to be down there as well, and it's going to be very, very crowded. But Echo has sent out these pop-up eclipse exhibits to 75 different public libraries across the state of Vermont. And I know many public libraries are going to be having their own events that day. So I have been encouraging people who live near me to stay at home. It's so special. You are in a place where you can literally walk out your door and see this event, this once-in-a-lifetime event here in Vermont for many of us. So I take advantage of that and maybe not decide not to get in the car that day. I think if I didn't have to go to work that morning, that would be my choice. I understand that people like to experience this event with a community. So maybe a neighborhood gathering or a gathering at your local park or a gathering at your local library would be the way I would probably go.
Yeah, avoid those crowds if you can.
Yeah.
Well, we just got one more question I'll sneak in here from a listener named Susan, who writes, for those of us in southern Vermont who cannot travel into the zone of totality, what can we expect if we're in the 97 to 99% zone of a partial eclipse? Would those in the 97th, 98th, or 99th percent zone still need eclipse glasses?
You will definitely need eclipse glasses. And matter of fact, you will need eclipse glasses for the whole event. So you will not be experienced totality, but it's still going to be a really exciting thing for you to watch. So yes, you're going to want to watch it. You're going to want to watch it with your eclipse glasses on the whole time that you are looking at the sun. And yeah, I think that even though you're not in the line of totality, I would probably balk at getting in the car and driving into the traffic that we're expecting as well, when you will be able to walk out your door and see a really amazing event as well. Even though it's not going to get totally dark for you in the middle of the day, it will get darker. And so that will be something exciting for you to watch as well.
And as I've mentioned a couple of times now, we'll be linking to a lot of the stuff that we discussed on today's show on VermontPublic.org for this Vermont Edition episode. But for other resources, specifically ones from ECHO, where can people go to find more information?
We have a whole page on our website that is dedicated to eclipse resources. There's activities listed there that you can do with your kids. There's video links of things that we've seen that are great for showing all ages of kids about the eclipse, about the science behind the eclipse. And I know that Vermont Public also has a lot of information on their website, too, about eclipse resources. So once you start, you'll just go down a rabbit hole on that. There's so much information out there. I've gotten a lot of great information from NASA, so you can go there as well if you're looking for more.
Great. Well, Elizabeth Knuckles, the Senior Education Manager for ECHO Leahy, for the ECHO Leahy Center at Lake Champlain, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Today on the show, we've been discussing how to get kids ready for the eclipse. Our next guest has built her own business that centers on just that. Well, at least recently it has. Carrie Cruz is a retired teacher in Williston. She has what's called a digitarium portable system. Basically, a movable planetarium dome that can fit up to 15 people inside it at a time. She brings her planetarium with its night skies to schools, libraries, and community centers all around the state. We connected recently, and our conversation started with Carrie describing what brought her to Vermont from Long Island.
So, yeah, totally spent my whole life downstate New York and felt I needed to be somewhere else, but always had a reason to stay. Whether it was my kids were in school or my job. I was a teacher for 34 years. My parents, you know, and then two of my kids moved up to Vermont and I no longer had a really strong reason to stay. So we made the move.
And where did you move to?
We're in Williston.
And how did you get in the planetarium business?
It is such a funny story. Okay, so I was a teacher, and when I retired, I wasn't really ready to fully retire. So I went to work as a part-time educator at the Cradle of Aviation Museum on Long Island, where they have, I think it's 250 or 300 seat planetarium and a portable planetarium system. So in addition to doing, you know, physics classes and science classes in the museum, I also worked in the planetarium and learned planetarium science. So then we decided we were moving up to Vermont, and I was actually looking for a place where I could open a cooking school. But we sold our house on Long Island just as COVID hit. And it became a real challenge to find a place, you know, in Vermont that was near my kids. So we happened on this place in, well, my real estate agent showed me this fabulous place in Williston. And on the property was an abandoned observatory that had been built by the Vermont Astronomical Society gentlemen, who are like my age, but like in the early 80s. And it had fallen into big disrepair. It was kind of an eyesore. Because nobody had used it. They lost their lease in like 84 or something like that. So they were here for like 2 years. So short of finding a great place to open my cooking school, I thought, oh, I think maybe this is pretty cool. Because like, I know this stuff. You know, I had been working for 5 years in the museum and the planetarium. So I used COVID time to renovate the building and explore my options and started my business.
And what does the building look like now for someone who's never been there before?
Oh, gosh. It's a cinder block building, but it is now a bright purple with sky blue doors. It's got some windows. And when you walk inside, it's semi-finished. So we have a nice finished floor, and it's almost like two separate rooms. I have like a little waiting area where we can talk and chat. And then on the backside, I set up my planetarium dome.
And tell us about the planetarium dome.
What is that like? It's magical. You know, it's so much fun. Kids come, adults too. It's sort of like everybody wants to get into inside. They're not quite sure what to expect, but it looks inviting and exciting. You know, it's kind of just like this big, giant blueberry dome. When you go inside, we sit around the edge and the computer in the center simulates the sky. So you lose perspective of the fact that you're in a 16 foot diameter dome and you're looking up and you just feel like you are in a huge space. And I find the portable dome to be my favorite place to teach because we're all together. We're kind of close. And it's a real interactive experience. You know, if you're in an auditorium with 100 seats or 200 seats, you lose connection with the people you're with. But in the dome, I'm seating maximum usually about 20, 25. And we're nice and tight. We're like all around the campfire, you know, we're all inside. And it becomes personal and beautiful.
How do you notice conversations changing with kids from when you're outside the dome to when you get in there? Is it easier to explain some of these scientific topics to them when they're inside?
Oh, absolutely. Because what you're looking at is not, well, first of all, you're not just hearing the words. Second of all, you're not looking at a flat diagram. You're immersed. So the dome is a 360 degree experience where the sky is above you and all around you. So it's a completely immersive experience. And you lose perspective of the fact that you are sitting on the ground, maybe in the school gym or something like that. And it becomes really immersive. And I love hearing kids, teachers, adults. Wow. Oh, you know, or wait, where am I? You know, they really, it's an exciting thing to be present for people when they get excited.
How many places do you think you've brought the planetarium now?
I would say for the eclipse program, probably around 30. But I've been doing this, easing into it for the past 4 years. So at the beginning, when COVID was still pretty prevalent, I didn't push myself to go into schools because I felt then it was an expectation for kids to go into the dome. But I really worked in libraries, most predominantly, so that parents had the option whether to bring their kids in the dome or not.
So to go back to the difficulties that can sometimes arise when you're trying to teach a complex or an abstract concept to kids, such as a total solar eclipse. I've heard that you use storytelling a lot in how you teach. Can you tell me about the role of storytelling, and is particularly when we're talking about something like the eclipse?
Storytelling is just a wonderful way to engage people and to connect people. Because when we look at our skies, we're looking through time, right? If you look at the sun, not that you should look at the sun, but when the sun is out, That light takes 8 minutes to reach you. So when you feel the warmth of the sun, that energy has time traveled. It has traveled to you. Using stories connects us to cultures and understandings of people long ago and brings us, it's all circular. It's all circular. And so understanding the science that came out of people's imaginations of trying to explain what was happening. You know, we make a lot of presumptions in science. We make an assumption. And then in science, we go about trying to prove or disprove that assumption. That's what science is, right? So when people had told stories long, long ago, they were basing that on their cultures and their assumptions or presumptions. And as time moves forward, the knowledge base changes. Even in terms of Pluto, right? So in 2006, Pluto was a planet. By August of 2006, it no longer was a planet because we discovered the Kuiper Belt. That's a fairly recent discovery in science. And something that completely changed everybody's sort of mindset. People are still objecting to Pluto not being a planet. But as the body of knowledge changes, our understandings change. So understanding where we came from and how we can adapt and change and move forward. Sort of an important scientific scroll, if not just entertaining. You know, and then you're looking at the eclipse. So may not necessarily be a G-rated story, but one of my favorite stories to tell, there's a Sanskrit legend about a demon who stole an immortality potion, and the sun and the moon saw him do this. And just as the demon started to drink the potion, they called out to Vishnu, who came and found the demon. And just as that potion was being swallowed down his throat, Vishnu lopped off his head and the potion fell out through his open neck. Well, the demon was furious with the sun and the moon. So he spends his time, his head spends its time, traveling around the skies, trying to catch either the moon or the sun in anger. Every once in a while, he manages to catch one. So in a total solar eclipse, the demon is capturing the sun, swallows it, eats it, yum, yum, yum. And when you see the moon moving on in its orbit in front of the sun, it looks like a giant vanilla wafer getting munched away, you know. So munch, 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 eats the sun, swallows it, but it has nowhere to go. And it again falls out through the bottom. Now, tell that story, I guarantee you, when there's a total solar eclipse in less than a week, you're going to go outside, you're going to look at the sun getting munched, and you're going to be thinking of this demon.
I don't know whether to thank you or what for that, Carrie. That's amazing.
But now it connects you. How old is that story? Thousands of years old. But it's understandable. You know, yeah. you can picture it.
Yeah.
And it's just enjoyment.
We've been talking about the eclipse here in Vermont for months now. Do you ever get sick of it? Are you burned out on eclipse talk yet?
It is so funny because I have this eclipse program that I'm running through the planetarium, and it's basically the same visual. My narration changes. You know, obviously, if I'm talking to 6-year-olds, it's different than if I'm talking to 16-year-olds. But I've been doing this pretty much 6 days a week now, or many, many weeks, 6 days for many, many weeks. And I am not yet tired of it, which amazes me. And I think it's because I'm interacting with people, you know, and I've always said, the planetarium lady is not an astronomer. My background is in education. I'm a teacher and I'm a people person who knows enough about astronomy to guide you a bit and help you satiate your curiosity if it's beyond what I already know. So that's my role. So I think interacting with people and watching their reactions, that's more what I'm doing. I'm gauging myself on the people I'm with. And people are never tiresome, never.
Where will you be for the eclipse?
I'm going to be at my house, at my observatory building, because up on a little bit of a rise. And I have my friends from Long Island that worked in the museum with me, and another good friend coming up, and we're going to be eating sun chips and moon pies. Hopefully have a fire pit and watch the eclipse. Yeah.
Any concerns about it being cloudy? Will the day still be fun?
I think it's still going to be fun. And I think even if it's a cloudy day, we're still going to have an experience. And when people come into the dome, I tell them this, it's still going to get dark. It's still going to be cooler out. The animals around us are still going to be reacting and things are going to sound different, feel different, you know, and you have to use all of your senses when you're experiencing totality. They say, I've never really experienced it, but from everything I've seen and read, people have this like heartfelt reaction to being in the path of totality. And whether you can actually see the corona or not, everything else around you is going to be changing. And it's a moment we've all been waiting for. And it's a moment that everybody is focused on at the same time in that 115 or 16 mile, you know, span of totality. So you've got all this energy all focused in one direction. And if we tap into that and to the nature around us, I can't see it being a disappointment regardless.
That was Carrie Cruz, also known as the Planetarium Lady. She's based in Williston, and you can learn more about her and her mobile setup at theplanetariumlady.com.